Here's Andy Udman.
We need our universities to work on issues that empower farmers and do not depower farmers, such as the Enviro Pig does, I believe. The reason that universities do not spend their time researching things that empower farmers is simple. Most of those things return no profits to multinational corporations and family farms. And family farms simply do not have the money to pay for research that helps keep the doors open in universities like Guelph. So university researchers are bought and sold like the EnviroPig they were hired to create.
Canada has just approved a limited production of the EnviroPig, a genetically modified breed of pig which produces cleaner manure, containing 65% less phosphorus. The runoff of phosphorus in animal waste into surface waters can create invasive algae blooms, spurring dead zones in the ocean incapable of supporting marine life. While it may take years before genetically modified pigs are available for human consumption, fear of these so-called Franken-pigs is already widespread.
There's a very crude expression, and I won't use it. I'll euphemize it. He's so arrogant, he thinks his doo-doo doesn't stink. Now we hear about this EnviroPig.
And it's been abandoned from the University of Guelph.
And its doo-doo doesn't stink? What is an EnviroPig?
It's a genetically engineered pig, and it's basically they're trying to design a pig that will suit the factory farm model, and fortunately, for now, it's been shelved. The whole issue at the University of Guelph, it's been shelved, but it could come back. We don't know.
Are they trying to modify everything we eat?
As long as they can have patents, yeah, they would love it.
Good morning, London. We should say hello and do some introductions here. My name is Andy Udman, along with Pam Killeen this morning, and we're talking about the opposite of Excel Foods. This whole controversy with Excel Foods has brought more awareness to what all the issues, Pam, that you have raised over the last few years than any other single story in the last while.
Yeah, the biggest meat recall in the history of Canada. And now a Brazilian company is going to take over the management of Excel, and they're patting themselves on the back. I saw in the news last week that now that this new management is going to come in, what they're going to be able to do is process 5,500 carcasses a day versus 5,000 historically, and now it's going to be 5,500 carcasses a day. And this is somehow a great feat, and we're all supposed to be very confident about it.
As Rick Mercer said in his rant, they all come on one end, come in one end of the factory on their hooves, and they go out the other end on these little styrofoam trays.
Oh.
5,000 before, now that...
Now it's going to be 5,500.
Oh!
Yeah, yeah.
Yippee-yay. We have a special guest this morning who I suspect may have something to say on this.
Oh, yes. I'm so thrilled this morning to have Sean McGivern on the phone. And he's the president of a newly formed agricultural group called the Practical Farmers of Ontario. And he's going to be speaking at in London, here actually in Thorndale, on Tuesday night. And I've also been invited to join in to speak at this event.
Is he, like you, another rebel?
Oh, yeah. He's a rebel within the farming community, yes.
No kidding. Yeah. Because isn't the trend totally toward the factory farm, the big farms, and the Excel-type plants? Hey, let's welcome the rebel, Sean McGivern. Hi, Sean.
Hi, Andy. Thanks for having me on the show.
Good. You're a farm boy?
Yes, I am. I farm in Grey County.
I see. I'm a farm boy from way back. Pam's a city slicker, but we'll let her into the group, okay?
That's great. Hi, Pam.
Hi, Sean.
Well, what are you up to, Sean? You have a group called Practical Farmers of Ontario. What's your group designed to accomplish?
Well, we formed back in March of this year, and we just felt like there was a really strong need to have an organization to represent the views of people who are still thinking practically and logically in agriculture today. There's this huge concept that unless you're a big mega farmer doing monoculture agriculture, that you need to get out of the way and make room for the real farmers. And we believe that because the vast majority of farms in the province are still small farms, that there needs to be a voice at the table for family farms.
Just so you know, I have a niece in Exeter. I pray she's not listening this morning. Actually, I hope she is listening. She and her husband run a large chicken farm, and I keep hearing this word quota. I have friends near Aylmer who just opened what is roughly an $8 million operation. I think about $3 million of that is actual buildings and physical plant, and the other, something like $6 million, is the quota, the mere permission to produce dairy products. What's wrong with that scenario, Sean?
Well, the problem with the quota system, as I see it, is it was never designed to operate in the form that it's operating today. Many farmers back in 1963, when supply management started in the dairy sector, were given that quota for free. Now they've, over the years, they've decided to allow a price attachment to it and allow farmers to buy and sell that quota. And, you know, I really hold people like Farm Credit Canada accountable. They have really spearheaded.
What has been the effect, Sean? Sorry, for the sake of time, I want to move right to the bottom line. What's been the effect on the consumer?
The consumer is definitely disadvantaged because they have a very limited supply of dairy and poultry options. And they also have to pay more for their product. I mean, somebody's got to pay for those millions of dollars worth of quota.
We did a whole show recently on the difference between the cost of cheese here in London and if you drive just across the bridge in Sarnia. Sorry, Pam.
No, exactly that question. How much more are Canadians paying for these foods compared to the Americans?
It really depends on the product. But, I mean, there are some tariffs that are, you know, 200% or greater on different products. And, I mean, I hear time and time again that supply management is such a great system because it's not subsidized. But, I mean, the challenge I put out to supply-managed farmers all the time is that they're involving themselves in crop insurance, they're involving themselves in CASE, NISA, Environmental Farm Plan, all the programs that regular farmers are. So when I hear supply-managed farmers talking about the rest of the agriculture getting all these wads of money handed to them and checks in the mailbox, I mean, I go to the mailbox every day and I haven't got a check yet. So.
Okay, on the opposite end of the spectrum is the pork farmers who do not have this kind of system.
That's right.
And they have been dropping like flies. Their business has been devastated. In fact, the government's paying them our money to get out of the business.
The challenge with the pork industry is that it's really been set up to fail, in my opinion, because, you know, we in the 80s and 90s, farmers are really encouraged to build big barns, really focus on pork production. Don't worry about growing your crops. Don't worry about producing your bedding or any of that kind of stuff. That just produce pork. And the feed mills will supply you with all the ingredients, everything you need. You just produce pork. And, I mean, that's something that we've never done on our own farm. We do produce pigs. We do ship pigs regularly. And we produce all of our own feedstock on the farm here. And I think that's really important that farmers need to work with the farm system they have and not be 100% dependent on outside sources.
How difficult is it for a young person to get into agriculture today?
It's very difficult for young people to get into agriculture. I think a lot of people have seen a lot of articles in the farm papers about the massive rise in land values.
Let's do a little quick math. I understand that Perth County, right around the Stratford area, now has the most valuable land agriculturally in the province of Ontario. I always thought it was around Chatham-Kent.
No.
Where years ago it was $8,000, $9,000. We are now up to $15,000 an acre. So what does that work out to for a 100-acre farm?
$1.5 million.
$1.5 million for a 100-acre farm, which is barely big enough to turn around some of these big tractors and combines today.
And the problem there, Andy, is that directly relates back to supply management. There's no argument about that. That's being fueled by supply management. Look at the number of poultry and dairy farmers in your county compared to the number of poultry and dairy farmers in Chatham or Kent. You know, there's very few livestock farmers left in that area, yet you can get much, much greater yields per acre in Chatham or Kent than you can in Perth or Oxford, you know?
Pam, let me ask you, what's wrong with this whole picture, these large, large farms or factory farms, as you
Well, if a consumer wants to get a free-range chicken, free-range chicken egg, and a farmer can only have 300 chickens on the farm, it doesn't make it very viable for the farmer. What Sean is trying to do is come up with exemptions, essentially, so that farmers can actually take on 2,000 chickens and then make it a more financially viable...
Who said they could only have 300 chickens?
Sean, go ahead.
That's a policy by the chicken farmers of Ontario. We have the most rigid policy of any of the provinces in the country. And if you were farming in Saskatchewan, you could have up to 4,000 chickens per year without quota. If you're in Nova Scotia, you could have up to 10,000. If you're in BC, you could have 2,000 birds. Same in Alberta. So we're at a huge disadvantage in Ontario. The chicken farmers of Ontario don't want to see small farms being viable. They want us to get out of the way and steamroll us as small farmers.
Wow. But what does this mean for the consumer? What does it cost to get a free-range chicken and pay for free-range chicken eggs?
Yeah, the problem with the system now is that it's so cost prohibited, and if somebody wanted to start into raising chickens alternatively from the big factory barns, then they would have to buy a minimum of 14,000 units of quota. That works out to about 1.8 million, I think.
Oh, my God.
And that would mean you would have to produce a minimum of 90,000 chickens a year.
Sean, what money is invested in, I don't know if you have this figure, in agriculture in Canada? not in barns and in tractors and in cows, just in the permission, the license, to sell your product.
I have heard the number $5 billion. I don't know if that's correct or not, but that's the number I have heard tossed around.
Okay, I'm going to bounce it back to you. The figure is $30
billion. $30 billion.
I saw this in an interview when I was researching this, which is just a staggering amount of money, not in infrastructure, but just in permission. We have to take a short break when we come back. What is Sean suggesting with Practical Farmers of Ontario? Is this back to Old MacDonald Had a Farm? Is that practical in the year 2012? We'll be back with that in just a moment. Right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. Okay, Pam, you had it on your Facebook page. We just could not have this discussion about factory farming versus local produce without sharing with you a recent rant by our good friend Rick Mercer about the Excel Food plant and the story that we've just had, the massive, massive recall with everybody now thinking... rethinking their nutritional habits. Here we go.
The thing that freaks me out the most about this whole meat recall story is the sheer size of the story. How is it possible that one plant is responsible for one-third of the beef products in a country of 35 million people? I'll tell you how. Excel Foods is not just a meat processing plant. They're practically their own country. I'm surprised they don't have a seat at the United Nations. Every day, 5,000 cows go in one door and come out the other door on styrofoam trays. But don't worry. There are 40 meat inspectors working two shifts, which means they have to inspect 3.5 cows every 60 seconds. So, no blinking. Does anyone think this is a good idea? I mean, I know the Minister of Agriculture, he thinks it's a good idea, but does anyone on this planet think that? And here's a question. Who the hell are XL Foods? If you go to their website, you will see that they're a company that is built on trust and a firm handshake. Past that, it's all a mystery. It's all pictures of cows grazing in meadows. It's like a website for a spa. And then way down in the corner, there's a button. Recall information. I thought it was the Like Us on Facebook button, but of course they're not on Facebook because they're like a secret society. It took weeks for people to figure out who owned the company. Combine that with a Minister of Agriculture who spends half his time in witness protection, we might as well all just crawl in a freezer and shut the door. This is not a meat recall. This is a wake-up call. The entire system is designed to keep us in the dark. And if we let it stay that way, we're cooked.
We're cooked. Wow. He's hilarious,
isn't
he?
I know,
but he just makes an absolutely great point. We just have a short amount of time left, so I want to get right to Sean McGivern, president of the newly formed ag group Practical Farmers of Ontario, who believe. What's your mission statement, Sean?
Our mission is really to be the voice of the family farm and to be there at the table when discussions are being had around agriculture and agricultural issues and, you know, challenge the status quo. The status quo is not good enough. We've lost a whole generation of young farmers. The average farmer, you know, is headed towards 60 years of age, and we need to definitely, you know, make some serious changes if we're going to have an agricultural system here in Ontario that's going to be a benefit to both consumers and farmers going ahead.
Pam, we have a meeting coming up locally very soon.
Yes, on Tuesday night, 7 o'clock at Thorndale at the auction house on Purple Hill Road, I think it's called. Is that it, Sean?
Yep.
Okay. And your website, there's lots of information there as well at practicalfarmersontario.ca. I'm going to be speaking there as well.
What are you speaking on, Pam?
About what consumers can do to protect their food supply. So Sean is speaking. I don't know any other speakers that you might have, Sean?
I believe there'll be one other speaker. I just don't have that gentleman's name with me.
Sean, well, let's get to the bottom line here. The average farmer today runs like 1,000 acres, you know, and has a combine with a header on it that's 40 feet wide. Can you reverse progress? What are you saying, really?
We're definitely not trying to reverse progress. We're trying to. It's just like in consumerism, you know, there's room for Walmart and there's still room for independent specialty stores and businesses, and that's all that we're trying to do is preserve the right of family farms to coexist in this society. And we know there is a demand and a need for the products. I myself, as a farmer, I'm dealing with consumers on an ongoing basis and selling my products direct to consumers.
Really quickly, what do you mean when you say family farm?
Well, family farms can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. You know, agriculture looks a lot different in Grey and Bruce counties than it does in Chatham or Kent or Perth, Oxford. But, I mean, everybody's got to find their place in the agricultural community, and we think there's room for everybody, and diversity is something that's always going to strengthen the community, and rather than pitting farmer against farmer.
What I hear you saying is smaller and better and no manure runoff into Lake Huron, so we can't swim at Ipperwash.
Well, I think if you look at things like agricultural censuses, you'll see right away that 85% of subsidy money goes to 15% of the largest farms in the province. And so small, diverse farms generally don't qualify for government handouts and payouts. So really, small farms are subsidizing themselves, and they're covering their cost of production by dealing direct with consumers and finding alternative niche markets.
Sean, a pleasure having you this morning. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Andy and Pam.
Sean McGivern is president of the Practical Farmers of Ontario. Pam, just in 30 seconds, your subject at this meeting on Thorndale on Tuesday night at 7 o'clock, what consumers can do to protect their food supply from being destroyed by the multinationals and the government. Is our food supply being destroyed by...
Oh, it has been devastated over the last several decades. The quality of the food that we're getting today is not the quality of the food that we had in our history. So consumers, to change the situation, need to change how they shop for their food. So when you're voting for the small family farm, when you're buying your food from a local small family farm, then you're voting for it. And to vote for the factory farm model, of course, today we're seeing so many problems within that model. So I think what we need to do is keep educating and motivating consumers to start changing where they shop.
And might that have anything to do with the fact that we are, as you so often say, sicker, fatter, and more depressed than ever?
Our farm, if they're producing the food properly, is our pharmacy. That's where we should be going to get our medicine in the first place. I'm still teaching my nutrition boot camp, Andy, at the Central Library. So this Saturday and next Saturday, I'm going to be teaching about the importance of buying nutrient-dense foods and how to properly prepare them as well.
Pam was going to stay, but I understand you have to rush off to get your flu shot.
No, I don't have to rush off to get my flu shot.
She's not getting her flu shot. Thanks, by the way, for joining us in the last hour. Folks, if you missed it, we had a lively discussion, but give us 20 seconds on the flu shot.
On the flu shot? I think what people need to do is start digging deeply into the research and look to see that there's independent, truly independent research that shows that the flu shot doesn't work. So, you know, don't go running out to get your flu shot before you do some research, and also make sure you read that package insert. I know the writing is really small, but make sure you read it, because I think if people did read the package insert, they wouldn't go.
Ryan, the look on Pam's face when I said she was rushing out to get a flu shot. You know, the jaw dropping, hitting the table. She thought I was serious. Pam, you're a good sport. Thank you so much for all your good advice.
Thanks, Andy.
10:30 news update. We'll be back on the other side to talk about a revolution.